Hello and welcome back to the Women's Soccer Podcast. I'm your host, Liam Greco, and today I'm interviewing Chris Petroselli, the general manager of Dallas Trinity Football Club, who are participating in their inaugural season of the USL Super League. Chris was previously the head coach of the Chicago Red Stars in the NWSL, as well as various collegiate programs. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
So I wanted to start first by going back to the beginning of your career, which is when you were a collegiate coach. You've been a part of the women's game since the 1990s when you were coaching collegiately, and the game's growth since then has been evident. Speaking as someone who has witnessed this progression firsthand, what areas have experienced the most drastic growth, and where does women's soccer need to continue improving to become more economically sustainable, or any other area it could grow in?
Well, first, I think the quality of the athlete involved in the sport has skyrocketed. You know, if you look back in the 90s, there certainly were some very, very good players. But the athletic ability of players these days is phenomenal. You know, you watch any of the national teams, the professional teams, and they're just some really, really top-end athletes out there. And that changed the game considerably. You know, the game became a much different game in this country because of the athletes. And that's why you see, you know, such a transitional game in the U.S. because these players are so physically gifted. I think the game has grown a great deal, obviously, off the field as well as on the field. I think if you look back in the 90s, there was very little media coverage. You never saw the player in a commercial, things like that. Now you see players all the time that are, you know, that are widely known for their exploits on the field and are recognized off the field. So I think the overall recognition of the game has changed a great deal as well.
So besides the collegiate game, you spoke about a lot of these players who have grown on to become big, great stars. You've coached many of them as you coached various levels of the U.S. Women's National Team's youth systems. And so asking you, as you've clearly developed a Trinity roster of a lot of young talent who has played at the youth system in the national team side, how does playing in these environments like the youth national team help with player development as you're under such a high-pressure stake environment?
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference taking these teams of national team players at 16 years old and traveling around the world and playing some of the best teams in the world and just going into these different environments. I remember taking the under-21 team into China for a two-week tour that was about 3 years before the Olympics were in China. And many of those players who played on that youth national team actually played in the Olympics in China. So they already had some experience of playing in that country and dealing with the different issues, whether it's travel and, you know, different food and different environments, but also different styles of play. So, you know, the youth national team program has really exposed many of our players to all of these different experiences that have come back to help them in World Cups and Olympics and certainly within the program.
So you talked about that exposure to the professional level that you experience as being a part of the youth national team. The Super League is clearly adapted from that with your academy system, where five players can be part of the academy system, training the first team players, not losing their collegiate eligibility, but still being able to get that professional environment. As you've seen both sides of it, having been a part of that youth national team and also building the academy side at the Trinity, what parts of the process do you believe that the USL Super League should integrate into their academy system that's comparable to the youth national team, and what should the Super League do differently?
Well, I think ideally it would be wonderful if every Super League team had their own academy and had a team full of players and numerous teams full of players where, you know, they can impact younger players and style of play and technical growth. So I think that would be a big step. I think it's wonderful that we have these players that are involved. I'm enjoying, first of all, having the young players in the team, and they're doing really, really well. And I think we're seeing that across the league. And I think we're seeing more and more younger players get involved now on the pro level. Now, there's an avenue for it. It's financially viable in many cases. And we've only seen those players, you know, continue to get better and better and better, you know, just looking across our national team, and you look at, you know, Mal and Sophia Trinity, all players that spent little or no time in college soccer, but, you know, have really developed into great players.
So obviously we'll get back to the Trinity in a minute, but you talked a lot about your various other roles you're a part of. You were a head coach of the Chicago Red Stars a few years ago. That was your first professional soccer job, and you came into that job after a very dark time for the Red Stars organization and also the NWSL as a whole. Without diving into anything you don't want to talk about from that time, how important was it for you to prioritize the mental and physical well-being of players, but also ensure that the team can continue to prosper on the pitch? And that player-first mentality that the Super League has strived so hard to reach, how will having that experience help you in your new adventure here at the Trinity? Yeah.
I think when I went into the Red Stars, I think the most important thing was just to try to create a little bit of stability, because it had been a bit unstable and they had had a lot of issues. And I think many of the players were, had some PTSD, from the whole experience. So it was important just to settle everything down and try to get focused back on the game itself. And certainly, I think, in that first year, we were able to do that and get the players playing, just giving them the joy to play again, which I think they struggled with some. And I think that's what the Super League is all about, is giving the players the opportunity to express themselves, to enjoy their game, and to have it be their league. And I think it's working really well, honestly, being in the middle of it. I think that I'm seeing players that are really enjoying playing, really enjoying playing for their city, enjoying playing for their club, and enjoying their game. And I think there was a good period in the U.S. where many of the players, like, it was a bit of a struggle to be a professional player. I think that's changing.
Yeah. So before we transition to the Trinity, one more follow-up question. Do you have a favorite memory from the Red Stars, the time you spent at the Red Stars that you'd feel confident sharing, or any just memory that sticks out to you personally from your time there?
Well, look, the greatest thing about being involved in that time with the Red Stars was watching Mal Swanson play. There were times where you're on the sideline and you're more of a fan than you were a coach, because some of the stuff that she did, you were amazed by. So I think that was a real special thing to watch what I would say is, the best striker in the world at the top of her game.
You've talked about how Mal captivated many audiences. And the best part about the Super League is that it's bringing top women's professional soccer, Division I women's soccer, to more markets around the United States. How did this opportunity at the Trinity come about? And what appealed you about the project that the club was building from the ground up, being an expansion team?
Well, first of all, we love Texas, my wife and I. We wanted to make every effort we could to get back into Texas. The opportunity opened up, and really it was a conversation with our president, Amanda Vandervoort, that convinced me that this was the right place. And in the conversation with her, she laid out a vision of what the league was and what the league will be. And I think a lot of it aligned with how I felt the players should be treated and how I felt a franchise should develop. So I think that was a big piece for me to listen to her and have everything aligned, because I think the players are the most important part of this whole thing. And so I've always thought that way. I've always felt that way. And I wanted to be in an environment that really celebrated the players.
So what stage did you join this club at, for listeners who may not know? And what was the process of building this team?
The league was sanctioned as Division I in February. I joined in March as really the first employee of the club. We had nothing. We didn't have a water bottle. We had no players. We had no staff. We had no infrastructure. And so my job really is to build the roster and the staff. And so I started out in two paths, one with the staff and one with the players kind of at the same time. And building the roster, the first thought was, can we get some quality players from the Dallas area, which we know there are a lot, and have that be the core of our team, and then sort of expand from there throughout the country, throughout the world. I felt I had a little bit of a advantage in that I felt I knew the market pretty well. I certainly knew the American market and the players that were out there. Many of the players that are in our team are players that I saw play in college or recruited in college. So we went that route. On the staff side, I had a coach in mind from the beginning, someone that I had known for a while in Paulie McDonald, who, I thought if I had a chance to hire at some point that I would do that. And we were able to reach out and get her and then, sort of develop the team with her and develop the staff with her.
That's very funny, because one of our questions coming up is actually about the Texan influence on this roster, but it really shows how you were building from the ground up. This is your first time being in a front office position of a club, and as you were building this club from scratch, what was the process of building this roster like for you, and what is a lesson that you have learned since the beginning in March that you wish you had known earlier?
Yeah, I think the lesson is there's a lot of players out there. There really are. And that if I had to do it again, I'd be a little more patient and even wait a little bit longer in making some final decisions. Because as I said, there's a lot of good players out there. Building it from the ground up was interesting. You started and you got a few players, and then the phone calls were coming. The agents were calling. The players were sending stuff in. I would say that we easily had access to 500 players that we were shifting through and just trying to get help in, you know, evaluating all of these players and figuring out which way to go with all of them.
There's been a lot of star power coming into this roster. Players like Sam Mezza coming into the team from the Dallas, Texas area. Is there one player signing that you have an abnormal or crazy process to get the signature over the line, or just one move that really sticks with you?
Well, the one move that stands out for me was the addition of Gabby Guillen, Costa Rican player. We wanted to have a Hispanic influence in our team as well, given our market. And I struggled a little bit with that. I struggled finding the what I thought was the right player and the right fit. And Gabby came to us late, but I'm sure happy we have her, because she's quite a fantastic player and just a first-class pro. And we're talking about a player who's been capped a number of times in Costa Rica, but she was playing in Costa Rica and was barely a pro league. And I'm not even sure if it is a pro league. And I think the opportunity to come here, she jumped at, and she's been really, really good.
A lot of these players have shined, and you talked about giving more opportunity for those players because there's so much talent in the game, but then there's also not enough roster spots. And that's what the Super League does such a good job at. And you talk a lot about how it's about fit as much as talent in a lot of ways, because you're building a cohesive squad. And when looking for players to join the Trinity, what aspects were necessary for their game on the pitch? And how did you want them to be able to contribute to the team culture off the field?
Yeah, I think we, again, two paths as we evaluated. One, the soccer piece. Are they athletic enough? Are they technical enough? Do they understand the game at the level that we need them to understand the game? Do they have some positional flexibility, which I think is important? And then, you know, what kind of person are we bringing in? And is it going to be one, a person who is going to work? Because the hard work aspect is kind of what the club is founded on. Our ownership, they're people that have worked hard to get to where they are. And it became real apparent that those are the kind of players that they wanted. So, you know, could we find players who would work? Could we find players who would be good in the community? Because we were going to put our players in the community, and we have put our players in the community a great deal. So they had to be able to handle themselves publicly, and then they had to do the right thing.
You've talked about the Hispanic and Texan influence that this roster has had throughout the process. And the USL Super League prides themselves just in general, the only pro soccer league in America that stays consistent with the global calendar. The fall to spring calendar that's followed by many European sides of the NWSL does not follow. And Amanda Vandevoer has said that she hopes that this league can build relationships with other leagues around the globe. As a general manager who's trying to make a roster that represents not just the Dallas area and Texas area, which you've talked about being important, but also globally, how do you intend to build this squad with more of a global influence on future windows? Amanda's remarks, how do you interpret those in regards to your role in building this league?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing our efforts starting, looking at it globally, starting to pay off immediately. Playing Barcelona in a couple of days. We're very close to signing a contract with a very prominent Mexican team to play a match this coming fall. I think we're in the process of planning a tour to Mexico in the winter. So I think we're going to reach out to different places around the globe and try to expand the brand to different areas. And we're also going to do that by continuing to evaluate talent from all over the world. And if we feel a player can help us, it doesn't really matter to us where they're from. What matters is, can they help us? I would have no problem if we used all of our international slots. You know, we get seven. We're on four right now. But I would have no problem, you know, being at seven or more if we could arrange to get more.
You've talked about this international influence you've tried to put into this squad. I think of the remarks that Yael Averbusch-West made about Gotham FC and how she wants the Gotham FC brand to be similar to the Yankee brand or the Boston Red Sox brand. And I think that's one thing that women's soccer, we talked about this earlier in one of my previous questions, could definitely improve on and engraving themselves in more of a societal culture aspect. We talked about the NWSL earlier and The USL Super League is at the same level on the soccer pyramid in the US, D1, with the NWSL. You've made various loan deals across the league, and I think of Sam Meza as an example, bringing her in from the Seattle Reign, bringing her to where she grew up in Dallas. And what do you hope that the relationship between the two parties can be like in the future, and why do you think that the Super League being D1 and not D2, like previously proposed, is so important for its success?
Yeah, I think certainly being D1 has gotten us recognition. It's put us at the same level. It also, I think, has given us the respect from other leagues, including the NWSL. The relationship, as far as I can see, the relationship is really good. You know, we've gone back and forth. We've actually loaned a player to the Spirit at one point. We've got three loans in our team that have come from the NWSL. We've been able to maybe become a landing place for some players that were in the NWSL. I think that my relationships with the people, the teams, the other GMs, the other coaches in the NWSL is pretty good. I hope it continues that way. I don't see any reason why it can't. I think what I'd like to see in the end is it, you know, us being, you know, competitors, and fighting for players and hopefully playing against each other and fighting for trophies, but respectful and cordial, because we're all trying to grow the game. And this is a USL belief, but the more opportunity, the more teams, the better it is for soccer.
Yeah, Amanda Vandevoer has spoken about this. We've talked in previous USL episodes about how America's size is comparable to a few dozen European countries, and there's only 14 teams before the USL Super League that were professional, and that opportunity gap is so important. Mike Gordon went to the Spirit during the Summer Cup, and that shows how this relationship can help both ways, because it allows the NWSL to get players in along with the USL Super League and vice versa. Ending this episode, speaking more directly to the fans, right? The Dallas Trinity are having their first home match against Barcelona before going to the Super League season. What would you tell a prospective Trinity fan about the side that you put together for inaugural season? What core values that they share with the Dallas area, and why is this team so important for Dallas sports, the sports scene there in general?
Yeah, well, we're the only women's team that's playing in Dallas. We are, again, a hardworking group that I think reflects the city. You know, the city is full of entrepreneurship, people that have come here and worked real hard to make it. And that's what we're trying to do. We're coming into an environment where we're starting from scratch and we're trying to make it. And I think if you come and watch our team, you'll see a group that plays hard, plays the right way. And I think that's important. For me, it's important that, you know, you have a team that plays the right way. And I think we're a team that plays the right way. We value possession of the ball and we value attacking soccer. And so anyone who's going to come watch us, hopefully they're going to come see an exciting game. Hopefully we're going to score some goals. And I think people would enjoy, you know, the product that we're going to put out on the field.
Ending this episode by talking about how the Trinity has gone to the Cotton Bowl, which is, I believe, it has a capacity around 90,000, if I'm correct, which is the largest stadium that any professional women's soccer team, I think it's actually larger than any professional men's soccer team in the U.S. What does that speak to the ambitions of the club and how they're really trying to drive this league and make a statement that they're not here to play second fiddle to NWSL? Yeah. It's a comparable landscape, not just in the pyramid, but in investment and talent. What does that say to you about the club?
Yeah, I think when we looked at it, we embraced being in the city. Like we really wanted to be part of the city. And the Cotton Bowl sits right in the center of downtown. And playing on grass was really important to us. Those two pieces were important to us. So the options, honestly, were pretty limited. But then the opportunity to play in the Cotton Bowl, and we think it's a really fun, historic venue. Look, we know that we're not putting 90,000 people in the stands today. And that it's going to take us time to build a fan base that, you know, can even make a dent in that stadium. But that didn't stop us. It didn't scare us. Again, we embraced being in the city.
That concludes today's interview with the general manager of the Dallas Trinity Football Club, Chris Petroselli. It was fascinating to hear from someone who's been a part of the women's game for decades and has witnessed the boom and growth of the game right from the sidelines firsthand. Chris's anecdotes about Mal while coaching Red Stars were a joy to hear, but so are her stories about the first time that he built a team from the GM role. If you like this episode, look into episode 80 and episode 84, where we interview players and coaches from around the Super League. Feel free to follow our show, leave a 5-star review, and share this podcast with your friends. Additionally, please follow the Women's Soccer Podcast, with underscores in between each word, on Instagram. Before we end, I wanted to extend my gratitude one last time to Chris and the Dallas Journey organization for giving me the time out of their busy day to get a behind-the-scenes look at being a part of a newly founded professional club. I really appreciate the fans who continue to show up for me episode after episode and cannot wait to continue growing the game together and see this beautiful community of ours continue to grow and prosper. Thanks again, but that's all from this time. I'm your host, Liam Greco, signing off. Peace out and see you next time from your host, LDG.